So we are not aiming to redevelop the electric engine or the fuel cell or anything. We are really the final integrator, and we want to work with a lot of suppliers and partnership. And so the second argument is really you don't need to redevelop everything with this size of aircraft. Third argument is because of the lighter certification timeline. For sure, it's still ambitious and it's still going to take a lot of years, but it's still below 8.6 ton. If you go above this limit, you're going to have more than 10 years to certify your aircraft.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. I'm your host, Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simply Flying. Every Thursday, I have important conversations with top aviation executives, technology entrepreneurs, and policymakers helping aviation take climate action. Conversations that help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you are a frequent flyer or an airline executive, if you care about sustainability or simply love traveling, welcome aboard. My guest today is Eloa Genotin, the 28-year-old founder of Beyond Aero. Beyond Aero is making an airplane, a business jet, powered by hydrogen fuel cell technology, using batteries to power this hydrogen fuel cell powertrain, capable of covering distances of up to 800 nautical miles, carrying 6 to 8 passengers. It's perfect for a London to Milan or a Barcelona to Rome flight, or even a Nice to Paris flight easily. Now, the interesting thing is Eloa is an outsider. She is not someone who's worked for 28 years in aviation. She's actually 28 years old. And yet she's managed to do a test flight, which is rare today, at least. She's managed to learn from Richard Branson what he would want in an aircraft like this. She's got the CTO of Dropbox advising her. She managed to go to Y Combinator, the famous incubator in the US, which has graduates like Heart Aerospace. It's a fascinating interview of what an entrepreneur's journey is like in pushing the sustainable aviation frontier. I'm sure you'll enjoy this conversation. Eloa, it is a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for coming on the podcast. You are the first female founder who is under 30, who is not only on this podcast, but you are a rarity in a rather male-dominated aviation industry. Often at conferences, I'm used to moderating manels because they're all mostly white men above 50 who are on the panel. And, you know, it's great to have you on the show. And I'm very curious, how did you get into aviation and what's your story of starting a hydrogen aircraft company?
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's my pleasure. Absolutely. So I'm going to try to be brief, but I think it's, coming from a dream of childhood of where do I come from, a very small village northwest of France. I was born and raised with four little brothers, so, you know, in the middle of, or in the family. And I was looking at the star, dreaming to be an astronaut and then fighter pilot and more. So I left home at 17 to go to Toulouse, the city of Airbus. And I remember to type on my dad's computer, what are the best schools or universities in the world to become an astronaut. And I realized actually, first you need to be an engineer or fighter pilot. And so that's how it has started. So I did some aerospace engineering studies. And then for my first year in at SupAero, the school in France, the school of University of Thomas Pesquet and several astronauts, I started to realize actually what I really loved was to build different products and invent different things that we could have an impact on the world. So I've started a few startups, more or less, if we can call them startups, but projects. Like six different of them. yeah, we have no time to go in detail, but that was a good moment. And then we did a master in entrepreneurship with Hugo, at Ecole Polytechnique and HEC in Paris. And then we went to the US to learn how to grow a big company, how to, raise funds and, you know, more the business side of the subject. So that's the long story, scenario. But what happened is that actually during COVID, we realized that we were missing one thing, is to find, to align our passion within the entrepreneurship spirit that we had. And you know what happened in aviation during COVID. And so you had a lot of debates about electric aircraft, electric maturity of the engine. And this is where we have started to think about, what can we do? What do we care about? What is our definition of success? And with Hugo and Valentin, my two other co-founders, we, after 6 months, it was not easy, but after 6 months of deep thought, we have realized we want to build an electric aircraft, but that could have a short go-to-market and then potentially scale and change the industry on the long term. So that's a bit of a short story because a lot of things happened. It was not easy at the beginning, but today that's why now we have decided to work on a six-seater CS-23, right? A private jet, fully electric, but running with hydrogen. And the deep vision that we have is that, you know, aviation will be electric one day. It's going to happen. The question is when? Is it 300 years or 20 years? But eventually it has to happen. So we're going to have different technologies, different market and different players. And that's how we have decided that for us, the right strategy was to do fully electric private aircraft, long range with hydrogen, longer range with hydrogen, CS-23 with existing technology. And we have started the company.
Wow. There's a lot to unpack there. And I'm going to talk about the electric aircraft you're building with hydrogen propulsion. Let's go back a little. Did you mention you worked on six different startups?
Yeah, let's say one of them was really a startup. Five of them were more project. One was more than 18 months with co-founders, with interns, with a product, with investors, like a real startup. The name was Atom. And the idea was to plug a supercondensator on smartphones. So to recharge, the supercondensator could recharge in less than 2 seconds with a graphene, you know, and then it could recharge your battery on a normal. So the idea was to exchange energy from a smartphone to another.
Interesting. That was
Phil's company.
That would have, either mine or my wife's phone, one of our phones is always discharged. So this would have definitely helped.
Exactly.
So going back, you've done five projects, two of them real startups. Before you did your master's, what happened to the whole astronaut dream? Do you still intend to become an astronaut one day?
I have realized that my definition of success was more related to having an impact on the world with this electric aircraft. For me, makes sense. It's still a childhood dream that for sure is amazing, but the job is changing. Like 20 years ago, the job of an astronaut was something else than what it is today. So I think I can have more impact by doing what I'm doing today, but it's still a dream.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about Beyond Aero. You're, of course, leading 3-year-old Beyond Aero now, just over 3 years old, and you're dedicated to developing hydrogen electric aircraft with a clear aim to provide sustainable alternative to private jets.
Yes.
That's an interesting one. I've seen, you know, Airbus building a hydrogen plane for commercial. I've seen, you know, I've had lots of founders here who are looking at commercial aviation. You're looking at private jets. Why private jets?
It's a good mix. It's a good balance of three reasons. First, the market needs. I strongly believe, and the 3 years of working in this industry convince us more that private jet users has to fly electric today. Is it because they are convinced that they need to make an impact on the world and be careful about the emission? Or they are not convinced, but the society is pushing them to be careful about the emission? Whatever the reason, they need to fly an alternative solution for flying today, and there is none. So first, the market needs. Second, because of the technology existing on the shelf. Like if you go above 1 megawatt, you need to redevelop a lot of the subsystem. But if you stay with relatively small aircraft, so six-seater, CS-23, like FAR-23, you can have a lot of technology existing on the shelf working with existing suppliers. So we are not aiming to redevelop the electric engine or the fuel cell or anything. So we are really the final integrator, and we want to work with a lot of suppliers and partnership. And so the second argument is really you don't need to redevelop everything with this size of aircraft. And third argument is because of the lighter certification timeline, for sure it's still ambitious and still going to take a lot of years, but it's still below 8.6 ton. If you go above this limit, you're going to have more than 10 years to certify your aircraft. So that was really the three main reasons why we have chosen to start with this specific aircraft, CS-23 six-passenger private jet.
Wow, that is well, very well thought out, I would say. I've spoken to lots of people who are building an 80-seater or 60-seater or a 30-seater, and you're right, there are lots of hurdles to cross when it comes to certifications or even the markets that they're trying to solve. What's been the response from the private jet industry? Have they embraced this? Are they questioning who's this outsider who's trying to teach us how to run our business? What's been the response like?
First of all, we have been really quiet about what we do for the first 2 years. We are not well known even today, you know, and it's good. I like it that way. We are working on our concept. We are working on our prototype. And I'm not here to speak or be known, or that's not what I'm looking for. So, first of all, we didn't have, because we were a bit hidden, we didn't have much solicitation, if I have to say. The response from the market is really, really pushy on the good side. That's why we are doing that, actually. Some are even asking to invest. And that's what we absolutely love about our business model, is that all clients can be investors. We have B2B, you know, more operators, and we have more B2C, like direct private jet owners. And for sure, they are ultra high net worth individuals and they want to invest. So it's not 100% of them. We have a lot of no's also, for sure. But I would say that the major answer from the market is really positive. From the industry, it depends. Some suppliers are super pro hydrogen and some are really not. So you have a bit of binary choice of are you for or not for hydrogen in the ecosystem? And so those who are really in and they know why, we don't have to convince them of what we do. And some are thinking this is not the viable solution for XYZ reason. In that case, we don't need to dive deeper and work with them. So we are doing our path, our way. And yeah.
Okay. I'm glad to hear. Let's talk about hydrogen for a minute, right? You said, you rightly said, the industry is divided on the role of hydrogen, whether it's real, whether it's not, whether it's going to be enough of it. Why did you go with hydrogen propulsion as opposed to electric or electric hybrid with SAF, for example?
So just coming back on why we are saying hydrogen electric, it's because our engine is electric. The fully, the aircraft is 100% electric. The engine is not powered from lithium batteries, but from a fuel cell. So it fuel cell hydrogen, hydrogen stored in tanks that is being transformed in electricity through fuel cells and powering the electric engine. We could use only lithium batteries for the full electric aircraft, but in that way we would reduce the range drastically. And that would be another market, which exists, I do believe. That's why I was saying it's not only hydrogen the ideal solution. I'm just saying depend of the market and the size of the aircraft that you want. And for all markets, private jets, 80% of the routes, it's London, Paris, Geneva, Nice, the main capitals of Europe. So if you fall into a too short range or shorter range, you're going to have another clientele, another type of clients, another needs, another is not interacting with individuals anymore, and does not make sense for my business model, from what I thought.
Okay, I like your focus on range. Let's talk about range. Given the current Beyond Aero 1 airplane that you're building, your prototype, where can it take us? Where can you go from Nice or Paris, for example?
We are in large Europe, so it's 800 nautical miles, which is quite good compared to batteries, but not as performance as kerosene aircraft for sure. So it's a good compromise from what we can touch. In Europe, it's 80% of the routes. So London, large Europe, Paris, Geneva, Nice, the main diagonal. And then you have Berlin, Barcelona, Madrid, etc., and a bit more. And in the US, it's either East Coast or West Coast. We cannot do both. But West Coast would be San Francisco, LA, Las Vegas, back and forth. And ironically, it's 86% of the market because the most of the market is focused on those three routes and those three cities. So even more in the US than Europe. And that's really what we aim for as a start.
Okay. Again, seems like it's well thought out. Who do you expect will be the users of this aircraft? Are we expecting someone like a Taylor Swift to be flying and individuals like that? Or are you looking to, you know, do deals with the likes of NetJets and Victor?
So we've done the market study. We had some hypotheses, a lot, like 150 of them. And we had to validate or invalidate our hypotheses. And that is helping us to co-design the aircraft with the clients. So today, we have several types of clients. I cannot go in detail of everything, but the two major parts are operators are going to be, so airlines, operators, and more are going to be more than 60% of our market. So it's more like a commuter in the main routes. I like San Francisco, LA, Las Vegas, back and forth. That's go-to-market, and the market is large enough for several years of production. Then we may scale and evolve the range with the technology. Better fuel cell, better tanks, mass ratio of the tanks, and more. But then you're right, all early adopters, the one investing in the company, the one knocking at the door when it's ready, are more the B2C, public personalities, top CEOs, the one with a public image, and they are the one helping us to fundraise and signing LOIs and this type of personalities. So today I would say it's 20% of B2C, public personalities, and 60% of operators and airlines. And then we have cargo. We have also, we are studying what we could do. But, you know, as a startup, you need to stay focused. We are not going to do everything. So working on that right now.
I hear the French President Emmanuel Macron is a big fan of yours.
Well, you have to ask him. I don't know. But he likes he's pushing the industry. And Beyond is one of the good startup that we have in the industry. So for sure, he's helping. Yeah.
Right. Can you explain Beyond Aero's decision to design an entirely new aircraft from scratch, which is a tough ask, rather than retrofitting existing airplanes with hydrogen electric propulsion?
Well, coming back on retrofitting, if we do that, we lose most of the range again. So if we do retrofit a private jet, take a Phenom or Falcon or anyone, I don't know if you have seen a hydrogen tank, but it's massive, it's volumic. So where do you put them? If you do that, you lose half of the cabin and most of the range. So you could do that. It could fly. It could work technically. You could even certify it, but which market? What's the business model? How do you scale behind it? So the idea was really for us to make aviation electric, you need to start a clean sheet design built around the hydrogen powertrain. So we are not pretending to reinvent the subsystem. We buy the tanks. We buy the fuel cells. We buy the electric engine. We buy most of the subsystem. We work with suppliers, partnerships. And the core business of Beyond Aero, the core IP, is how to redesign the architecture of the aircraft around the tanks, around the fuel cells, around the entire powertrain, entire chain. And that's really what we have been working on for 3 years. We have validated our subscale powertrain. But the main focus of the company is really about the architecture of the aircraft. Coming back to your points, for two reasons, the scalability and the long vision mindset, but also because of the range. Again, if you want to reach 800 miles, you need to have hydrogen and a clean sheet design. And so we have locked with patterns and different thought. The one of the only architecture that could work, that is working to have 800 miles. I'm saying that you can use different architecture that could exist. You can put the tanks on the wings, below the wings, wherever you can find it working. but it's not going to be able to reach 800 nautical miles. Or you're going to take longer time to certify, or the clients does not like it because it's not going to look like a jet, or different trade-off. So we have worked on this architecture to have a certifiable, good-looking jet aircraft to really reach this target market. Yeah.
Now, this is very interesting. Do you think this will give you a long-term advantage to have designed a clean sheet aircraft?
I think so. That's why we are doing it. Absolutely. Long term thinking, and that's why it's called One. Because we think we're going to do more later, but we'll see, you know, everything can happen. But also coming back to the founder story, or where do we come from? We didn't build the company from any core technology or one key pattern from a lab or something like that. All the companies, all the suppliers are doing that way better than us. They have their own expertise, their own years of development, and they have their own certification. All expertise, we have built the company around the certification of the aircraft. Who can we recruit today to have a strong DOA, to have a strong redundancy of every subsystem? So it's really all about architecture of the powertrain and architecture of the aircraft going together. That's really the core business of the company.
Very interesting. Now, you've just conducted your first flight, if I'm not wrong. What's next? Yeah. And how was this experience of the first flight? Of course, you're wearing this captain jacket that as we speak and record this interview.
Yeah. So we have test flighted. We have a validated our flight test campaign with a subscale powertrain. So it was equivalent of a two-seater. It's ULA. In France, it's ULM. It's a category where you don't need much certification. You can do prototyping, and it's different, very typical to France. So the idea was to de-risk some of different technology and mainly the architecture of the powertrain, but subscale. We worked also more with Formula One or automobile industry, different type of, hydrogen powertrain. Exist in cars, in boats, in different, not only aircraft. So we worked with the agility, like a startup cliche of it, on this first subscale powertrain, that we learned a lot. That was stressful for sure, but we learned so much. And with those ground testing and then flight test, we have validated with a lot of iteration, as you can imagine, but the architecture of the powertrain. Especially we are using a small lithium batteries, as a buffer and also for the climbing phase next to the fuel cell. So this hybridation between both was really a key intelligence of the powertrain that we needed to develop. So that was the flight test. That was really a very good moment. If we made our research right, with the first hydrogen aircraft ever of France, a second aircraft of Europe, because you have H2Fly who did but it was more like a glider, and also liquid hydrogen. And now it's top 5 or 10 manufacturers to have put in the air an electric aircraft. So it was really good moment.
Congratulations. No, very well done. We were watching this from our side closely, and one of the reasons you are here on the podcast today, and congratulations on that. What were some of the metrics that you were tracking? Because I know in these test flights you're measuring a lot of key metrics.
Oh, yeah.
What were you looking at?
A lot of things. As a start, the behavior of the fuel cell for sure. The hybridization ratio between the battery and the fuel cell, and especially with the within the altitude, how does it behave? Because we did more than 3 months of ground tested before. So we have reached the mission profiles a lot of time on the ground before. But in the air, we wanted to see how does it change with the altitude and with the pilot, and not just with our team on the simulation. And that was more also an experience on the methodology itself. Putting an aircraft in the air is not something that you can do like prototyping cars. And we had a pilot. It's not... mind-made. It was not some digital model that you can do and iterate again. So processes, the methodology was completely different. And that's why we have done it also, to learn fast and iterate on the ground first, and then in the air with the team. So
this is indeed very, very impressive. Was there something that went wrong that shouldn't have? I'm just curious, since it was the first
place. Of course. But not something unexpected either. And that's a good, that was a good balance that we had. But like I was telling you, that we did a lot of ground tested before, without the, only the powertrain first, and then a powertrain in the integration of the aircraft, and then with the pilot, but on the ground. And that was when some things did not behave as expected. But we did simulation again and again and again, and no compromise on safety at all. So we took the time it was needed to make sure that the pilot was giving us a go. That was a pilot decision to decide. And so he worked with us for more than 18 months, even more, because he was following the project with us since the beginning. So his role, his decision had a big impact on everything. And a lot of things did not went right first time, but we iterated fast, and nothing major either. So we could continue. Yeah.
Okay. Well done once again on that. You were, of course, part of Y Combinator, of which Heart Aerospace has been a graduate as well as some other aircraft manufacturers. How was that experience? Do you think that was critical to get you to where you are today?
Yeah, no doubt. YC is game changer. I don't know if you heard ever sometimes someone saying something different. It was really a game changer. And I think not just for aerospace, for every company. It was well thought, well organized, good feedback, direct, very pragmatic, very operational. We learned a lot as founders, but also as fundraising. And yeah, it had a huge impact. You know, you can really feel the before and after. And even inside the company, not just the media and things, really inside the company, how you structure, how you talk with each other, how you react, that was learning with the best from the best of the world. So I really admire what they have built and what they are doing for the startup ecosystem. Yeah.
Did they help you secure some of the funding and the partners that you now have?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Way more than that. But that's just part of one of the beauty about YC, that when you pitch at the end, you have more than 1,000 investors in the room, and they have 3 buttons, and one is good luck, one is I want to invest, and they click on it, you receive an email, and then you pitch and you raise. So it's a well thought machine. It's machine. Sometimes too much, because I had to do more than 280 pitch. Which
wow.
is,
wow.
yeah, that was a big one. But yeah, without them, we would not be there. And they really, made us, go to the next level. You know, we already raised a round before YC, and we were 7 or 8 people during YC. So part of the companies that were a bit major, compared to the really first IDs, YC guys. And then we did a second round during YC, and then way more, because it's a whole ecosystem. And also it's a strong network, strong community, where a lot of our potential clients are coming from also. I would advise YC to everyone.
280 pitches you did. I have myself built a startup, and we advise lots of startups now. What are one or two anecdotes or questions that come to mind out of these 280 pitches? Was there one or two that left an impression in your mind?
Good question. Let me think. Well, two actually. One positive of, you know, sometimes you have very, very good feedback from potential clients. And it was a CTO of Dropbox, Arash. I received an email from him. I did not know him, right? And I received an email, I love what you're doing. I'm flying in Paris, often. I need an electric aircraft. When is it ready? Can I invest? You know, this type of thing. Hello. Yeah. this market, market product fit, which is really strong. And as, like I told you, as an investor, And then we discussed together, and he's helping me. So yeah, that one was a very beautiful one. And then for sure, a lot of no's, a lot of no answer, like every founders. And sometimes I had a no answer for like 2 weeks, which 2 weeks is really long when you raise. So that was, not the way see fundraising is amazing, but one of the harder things to do.
Mm-hmm. No answers. Yes, I would rather have a no rather than a no answer. No answer is hard to deal with. You don't know where you are sitting at.
In your CRM, you don't know if you continue to push or not.
Yeah, exactly. Now, of course, the end result of all of this work you've been doing till now is you now have secured over $600 million in letters of intent for around 80 of your planned business aircraft. Are you able to share any details about who are these people who are so excited? When are you going to be delivering to them? When can we see C1 flying?
That's a good question. Unfortunately, I cannot disclose who they are because they are public personalities and because I'm not looking for communication right now. I'm looking for them to help us to co-build the aircraft together. So their feedback, and also because of flight shaming and a lot of things. So coming back on the figures of the market, we have pretty much the same, like 20% would be B2C of ultra-wide net worth individuals. And we have quite a few airlines or operators that are also helping us, but they don't have the same needs as a public image. Clients, but they are more looking for cheaper operating costs or diminish the operating cost per hour of the aircraft. Where the public personalities, they don't really look at that. They are more, is it zero emission? Is it, it's another type of need, which is complementary. Honestly, both is fine.
Right. Do you happen to have like a customer advisory board? How do you get advice or get them a seat on the table when designing the product? I'm guessing someone like a Taylor Swift wouldn't really know much about plane design.
Well, it's a user experience that counts because they decide, and they for sure they have a lot of advisors and they have a team to before they want to buy, but they need to have it's like a house or any big investment that they can have. It's the user, the experience that counts. Do they want it or no? And then if yes, then you go in, how much does it cost? What the operating cost? Is it safe? Is it certified? And then you have the team and the bunker and the wife or kids counts a lot in the decision. But as feels, they need to love the product. So it's all about the user experience. Do they need 4-seater, 8-seater? All of those questions. So how do we get there? We are doing 101, but this type of people, they don't have much time. So it depends with who and how. Sometimes it's more meeting them somewhere. I was lucky to meet Richard Branson on his island, this type of thing of, okay, I'm learning how he behaves and how he is. So that was a very good, good moment. And then, those who can or the right hand, of this type of clients, I put them around a table. So we do round tables every quarter. Sometimes we put a headset on a VR headset. And so they can discover the aircraft, walk around the aircraft, and they give us feedback. I like this type of engine. Oh no, I hate because it's scary to see a propeller. Oh no, I would like jet fan. Or this type of feedback. And the more we continue to converge our aircraft, the more we go in details. At first, it was more, do you want to see a revolutionary aircraft or something hidden that is not very well known? This type of large questions. And then we are narrowing down the market study with 101 interview and roundtables. Now we have our different personas. So you have the public personality, you have airlines, you have banker, you have corporates, you have different type of persona that could use such an aircraft with different needs. And so we have I love studying the market and the human behavior and what they are really looking for. And I think that's one of the power of the company, because we are caring from day one about the market needs. I've heard in the industry that some manufacturers of aircraft are saying, I've heard that in my interview, all the client will adapt to what we provide. And I'm like, okay, maybe, but that's where we need to change. And that's why I do believe that we are listening to the client needs and we can make a change in the long term.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely critical. I remember it's so fascinating because you're designing an aircraft from the ground up. I remember reading in Walter Isaacson's book about Elon Musk when Tesla was designing the first Tesla car, and they brought the designers on board. The designers were told, all you're given is this battery pack. Just put it at the bottom and design a car above it. Go crazy. And they said, yeah. You know what? We could not go crazy because we had to design something familiar, something with two doors on each side, something with a handle, something that looked like a car rather than, you know, a flying car, for example, or something from deep space. So their whole challenge was keeping the familiarity of the original Tesla Model S, which looks like a sedan, and not try to build something crazy. I'm curious about the design process. I believe you have a really good designer, and the design of the airplane was inspired by water, if I'm not wrong. How did that come about?
Yeah, Matisse is our head of design. He's amazing. He won the Red Dot of One with a Red Dot of Award with a Lilium Jet. He did 4 years at Lilium. And so it's a good mix of listening to the client needs. Like you said, it needs to look like an aircraft, not something crazy. Otherwise it's not safe. And plus we cannot certify. So first we need to listen to the client needs, and that's looping back with the market study. But second, it's also what type of product do we believe in? What do we want to do? And then let's say it's 60% of the client needs, then it's 40% of mix of the designer, thought of what he think aviation will look like in 10 years. But all of that, the top priority above all of those needs is certification. So we have Walter, who is our head of certification, it was really, really important for me that he likes very much Matisse and him can create a very good binom, so that it's not designed against certification. It's actually working together. And that was really important for me in the culture of the company to combine. If you have seen our aircraft, it's a conventional aircraft. It's nothing too crazy. It has to be safe first, certified first, and then it's experience, the user experience that we can add. Coming back on water, it's more the image of working around the hydrogen itself, the molecule of the hydrogen, very simple as you know, and building something around it, everything around it. So taking something very unique and simple, like one electron, one neutron, to build something the most difficult on Earth. Rockets and aircraft are the most difficult product that you can do. So it's a balance of white and black. It's a balance of organic and state-of-the-art technology. So the whole storytelling of the company was based on how to balance the extremes, how to balance this peaceful, simple state of water, hydrogen, organic. Why we are doing electric is this nature, but while doing state-of-the-art technology. So that was that's what you may have seen on our website. Yes, exactly.
So I found that quite fascinating. Let's talk about hydrogen. You just mentioned hydrogen a few times. One, hydrogen is not easily available, at least green hydrogen is not easily available right now. So, and I'm guessing your goal is ultimately to have all green hydrogen. How do you get there? Hydrogen storage and transportation is an issue. What are some of the challenges you will need to overcome to make this hydrogen propulsion a reality?
Well, this is where we should step back and actually not really talk about Beyond Aero, but more the industry of what's happening in the ecosystem. Because Beyond Aero is more surfing the wave of really a complete transition, starting in Europe for different reasons. Hydrogen, we would not do that product if it was only us working on hydrogen. We need to have the complete pivot of the industry, and that happened during COVID. As you know, Airbus is leading the way with hydrogen aircraft or commercial aircraft for 2035. That means that airports are working on hydrogen infrastructures. That means that governments are working on subvention, grant. That means that suppliers are working on each subsystem and technology at the top of the pie to make it certifiable. And that means also that certification entities, so EASA, DGAC, but also FAA are working on hydrogen certification. So Beyond Aero is more an example of what's happening and only focusing on a small targeted market. Small aircraft with a special market where the whole industry has pivoted. So coming back on hydrogen, indeed today it's not green, massively produced green. But actually what we are aiming for is not green, it's pink hydrogen. I don't know if you know the nuance, but that's why France and Airbus are really working on hydrogen, a complete industry change, is because we have 75% of our electricity coming from nuclear energy. That means nearly zero CO2 emission. So we can produce hydrogen in a pink way, not green. It's not nuclear energy means pink hydrogen.
So nuclear to hydrogen is what you're looking at then, because it's pink.
So that's why France, that's why Airbus, that's why government supports, that's why Europe, that's why. So green hydrogen will happen. It's more a shortcut in the language, because when you say green, you mean decarbonized.
Right.
So that's, that's what even the government is saying, green.
Right. So, that does make sense. So pink, you have it amply available in France. That makes sense. But what about other places? California doesn't have pink hydrogen, I think, as much as France does, for example.
No, this is going to be green.
Right. It's going to be green for California. What about airports? Because you need to pump this aircraft up with whatever fuel it's carrying on both ends. It can't just be on one end. Let's say you take off from Nice, you've got it. You land in Farnborough, you don't have it. So how are you working with airports in storage and, you know, fueling facilities?
Exactly. Today we signed more than 50 different airports who are willing to work on hydrogen infrastructure, and they are led by ADP, Airport de Paris. Mm-hmm. So Charles de Gaulle, Orly, but Le Bourget, especially the business airport. And since we are using gas hydrogen also with all size of the aircraft, it's way more easily to implement the infrastructure. So you have ADP investing several billions on the airport's infrastructure. You have hydrogen supplier like Air Liquide, investing 8 billions on the green and pink hydrogen chain. You have governments investing billions also to make this change. So, I can say that publicly we have announced our partnership with ADP. So that's public. I can share that with you. They have created a consortium called Hydrogen Airports with Airport de Paris, but also Air Liquide and Waymo. So again, we are only an actor pushing for sure. We are leading some workshops, being part of the debates and signing different airports to show them that it's doable, and also share with them our needs or technical requirements for the maintenance of the aircraft for the refueling. So we are doing several estimation of how many aircraft could we replace coming from your airport, and also sharing concrete information with our prototype. How did we do with our two-seater? This is what went wrong, what went good. That's a refueling station we have done, and safety, security that you need to have around the infrastructure of hydrogen airports. So I would say we are pushing for sure with everyone and working in different roundtables with airports also and leading the way. But actually, Airbus, government, Europe, ADP, Air Liquide, they are doing it anyway. So, you know, I've heard and read in a lot of different from different founders that great startup, it's all about timing. You know, I think it happened that we have a good idea at the right moment. 2 years later, we could not surf on this wave, but 2 years, 2 years before it was not possible, and 2 years later is too late. You're going to have a lot of startup happening in a few years, and we will be leading the way. Well, I hope we are working on that.
That's fantastic. I do have a question around team. You, of course, you're not from a traditional aviation manufacturer background. You know, it's not like you've worked 35 years at Airbus and then left to start this thing on your own. You do have a designer who worked with Lilium. It seems like you have someone in certification who is experienced. How big is the team now? And what's your team composition? Are you hiring a lot of people with aviation expertise, or are you still getting a lot of people from outside with technology expertise?
Good question. It's we are 40 people now, and we are going to triple the team in the next 18 months. So that's a good moment to structure the company. Again, it's in safety certification engineering first. So I don't have the exact figure, but I would say it's 90-95% are only engineers, and all of the we have a good mix of senior coming from the industry, Embraer, Safran, Airbus Helicopter, but we also mix that with a startup environment with young PhD, PhD engineer that have the fire to, you know, build something, not just be part of a big company or Airbus or Safran. They wanted to build a prototype and do something with their hands. So it was a good mix of young, energetic PhDs with a senior leading team that knows how to do things right with the certification processes. And then we have added to this core base of the company a few, we say agile or startupers or something. I don't know how to get it. Yeah, how to describe them.
But hot deskers.
One of them is coming from Ferrari, for example, in composites. He's an expert. Mm-hmm. He worked his entire career at Ferrari, and then he worked at Airbus after. But, you know, he did the Formula One Ferrari car 7 years. So every year he was rebuilding a car. So he knows how to, under pressure, how to do with a business unit that is only 70 people and all talk to each other and be fast and run things fast. So it's all about people, right? At the end of the day, we have this product, but it's all about how do you mix a good senior expertise coming from the industry, but with a mindset of we can do things right and we can do things new, even in this industry that sometimes right. is not so... Yeah.
Let's just say sometimes it's rigid. It's rigid, right?
And for good reason.
I've been here as an outsider into the industry for the last 15 years, and I know what you're talking about, what you're up against. Where are your teams based right now? I believe you're still based in France. Is it Toulouse? Is it Paris? You're in California as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Most of the team is really in Toulouse. We really think it's important to have every core member of the engineering team speaking to each other on a daily basis, especially when you are only 40 people. And right now we are closing the preliminary phase of the design. That means you need to speak to each other every day. So I would say, yes, 99% of the team is really based in California, in Toulouse, but I am based in California part of the time and Toulouse part of the time. Because of the market in Los Angeles, because of the American beauty mentality coming back to YC, investors, and a lot of things. We do have a small team in Paris also, but all of the core engineers are really in Toulouse.
So is the test aircraft in Toulouse where you yes. did the first test flight as well?
Ground test, yes. So flight, it was in Gap in a special airport, like 3 hours away. But but the ground test, the facilities, the prototype was in Toulouse. Yeah.
Okay. You talked about the rigidity of the industry. I'm curious, as someone who's not even 30 yet, as we record this today, do you face skepticism from industry leaders? Because when I started, I was 26, when I started Simply Flying as a complete outsider to aviation. And I always, the first question when I got off the stage was, how old are you? And I wonder if you get that question.
No, you know, what question I have is, what study have you made? Oh. What have you done before? This is really French or European question. Not much in America, but that's a question I always have. You know, in America, you can become someone with no special studies or universities. In Europe, you have to have big diploma, which I did. So it's easy for to play the game in France, but that's not what I like, and I'm not in that for that. So honestly, I didn't have face-to-face rigidity, but I know it's happening in the market. I know people are like, who are those guys doing a flight test aircraft with just Yeah, I know. But honestly, we don't really, it's most of the time it's genuine people who are trying to help. They may be impressed, but or they are more worried, or, you know, they have questions, or they are more intrigued, but not really direct negative feedback or direct, because what we are doing is not something, we are doing it calmly. We are not bragging about that. We are just doing our things. We were hidden. We are doing technology first, engineering first, and we are not announcing any crazy date for the certification. We are not showing any crazy design. We are, you know, doing things right, I think. Well, all way, at least. So honestly, for the moment, going good.
Doing things right. I think we can close on that end. Doing things right. I think you have come a long way. Congratulations on the first flight. Now, the final part of this interview is what I call the rapid fire round, in which we get to know you a bit more personally. And I'll ask you a simple question. You've got to give me a one-line answer. So starting with, what's your favorite airline?
Jetfly in Europe.
Jetfly. Okay. All right. That's a first on the show, I think. What's your favorite airport?
Le Bourget. Like, airport de Paris in general, airport, I would say Le Bourget is lovely. Yeah. Well efficient.
Definitely. Favorite book?
Oh, Good to Great. It's a pretty old book from Jim Collins. Good to Great. Classic one, but changed my life.
Yeah. Okay. When did you read it?
I read it several times. And page by page again and again. So I started to read it, I think, 10 years ago, really, during my studies. And then I read it like every 2 years. Yeah.
Okay. Favorite city?
Oh, Toulouse. I cannot say something else. Toulouse is amazing.
Okay.
Very engineer.
Yeah, absolutely. Favorite movie?
I have to say I have none, because I didn't grow up with a TV. I have still no TV today. I don't look much at TV. I know that I like biopic, like true story from existing entrepreneur. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have a jokey on that one. I have no favorite movie.
Well, I can recommend one. You can watch the Lamborghini movie, which is a biopic. Okay. And it's about how Lamborghini, the guy who created it, wanted to work with Ferrari. And he wanted to make a better Ferrari. But when he got rejected, he took it upon himself to build a better car. And it's a very, very good movie about engineering excellence. I think you will relate to it.
Thank you. Will do.
It's just called Lamborghini. An easy one. What is something you would like to learn?
A lot. I have so many things to learn. One thing, really, would be aerobatic. I have done a few times, but I want to get the license and do some competition in aerobatic.
Do you currently
fly?
When
I have some more time. Yeah, for sure. But a license in aerobatics and do some competition would be one of the side
Amazing.
Projects one day I would love
Perhaps
to.
Perhaps one
to
of those Le Bourget's, the real Le Bourget show. Paris
on electric aircraft, mm-hmm. on electric ones.
Exactly.
That exists now, so
that'll be fun. You'll have to think about how to get those three colored contrails out, though, out of the electric aircraft when it's only emitting water.
No, but with batteries, because aerobatics is you need 20 minutes, so you can can use batteries. Yeah,
exactly. What do you do in your free time?
Free time? What is that?
As
no, honestly, honestly, sports, again and again. I'm a lot of sports.
What do you play?
I love my deep secret is more free diving. You know, apnea when you hold your breath, and that's my only way my brain shut up. So that's my little things to relax. And I love water. I was born and raised by the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Apnea is one of the thing, but for sure running, gym, a lot of things. I did a gymnastic for 15 years. So yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's a long time. What is the best advice you've received?
A lot. That's also a difficult one. It's one, I think, yeah, I think I would say that's the one I'm also giving to some people. It's everything is written. I've been told that, and actually it's true. And even what we are doing, because even if we are doing something new, we are combining existing technology. You can learn how fuel cell works. You can learn how tanks work. And the certification, the everything, building onboarding in the company, recruiting a good team, everything has been written or someone has thought about that. So speak to as many people as you can, read books, listen to podcasts, and we are learning a lot.
Very nice. Well, final question. If you were on a long-haul flight, let's say from California to Paris, and you could choose your seatmate, who would you like it to be?
My co-founders.
Okay.
Hugo and Val. Amazing.
Good answer. How did you meet them?
At uni with Hugo, and 3 years later, Supaero with Hugo, and Ecole Polytechnique with Valentin. He was doing his PhD in flight test electric engine at Safran and Ecole Polytechnique. So, yeah.
Okay. Well,
they are amazing.
You've done well to get here, Eloa. Thank you very much for sharing your story, and I do wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. It's only the beginning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air. Aviation is one of the hardest to decarbonize industries, yet there are multiple paths to get to net zero. Awareness is key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing this episode on your network, on LinkedIn, Twitter, or even WhatsApp. Or perhaps you might consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this episode. You can start a conversation with us by writing to us at podcast@simplifying.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website green.simplifying.com and join the movement. Sustainability in the Air is an original podcast by Simplifying. The show is produced by Juraj Toth in Slovakia. Dirk Singer is our Director of Sustainability, who leads research for each interviewee out of Greenwich, UK. Shubhadeep Pal is our Supervising Editor based out of Mumbai and Singapore. The articles are written by Ayushi Badola in Dehradun in India and Meera Hull in Montreal, Quebec. Creative design is led by Ligia Esteve in Montreal. Baiba Dreamen is the project director for the show based out of Valencia, Spain. Special thanks to Wendy Sim in Singapore. And I'm Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simplifying and your host. Please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.